sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
I'll just talk for a minute on this meditation because there's something that I think is interesting and important in it. At the end of Aparokshanubhuti, which is a Prakarana Granta text written by Shankara, we should do that again sometime, I think. At the end of it, he's talking about Nididhyasana and Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Nirvikalpa Samadhi is when the mind is just, we think about it often. When we do Drikdrisha Viveka, we'll see there are many different types of samadhi, many different ways of looking at that. But when we say nirvikalpa, it means non-dual. There's no vikalpa. There's no subject-object relationship, basically. There's no subject-object relationship, which is satyam. That's a key. So now, let me just give you an example. If I hold up a clay pot, is the clay pot, pot, clay pot, savikalpa or nirvikalpa? The clay pot experience, is it savikalpa or nirvikalpa? And I would say, what would you say? You're seeing the pot. You're aware of the pot, but you're also aware that there's only clay there. Right? You're aware of both things. If you're aware of both things, that really there's only clay, but you're experiencing the pot, would you say that's salvikalpa or nirvikalpa?
Nirvikalpa.
Yeah, nirvikalpa. Mm-hmm. Because there's only one thing there, that the pot is mithya. It's very clear that it has no being of its own. So say in this world, if I say there's a seer-seen duality, which there is, I see through these, with my mind, my eyes, I see you, right? Or this. So there's a subject-object relationship. But if I'm recognizing in that subject-object relationship that I am both the subject and the object, because I'm the self of the subject, the self of the object, if that is clear, then is that savikalpa or nirvikalpa? It's nirvikalpa because the savikalpa is mithya. And mithya has no being whatsoever apart from nirvikalpa, and apart from whatever is the adhishtana. You see what I mean? So mithya, the experience of mithya does not bring about, it brings about the perception of two, but the perception of two meaning, you know, infinite duality, it brings about the perception of infinite duality, but that perception of infinite duality has no being apart from the non-duality, which is the satyam and self-evident in that perception. If the non-dual self is not self-evident in the perception, then the perception is not mithya for you. For a perception to be mithya, the adhishtana has to be recognized. Otherwise mithya has no being. Even the word means nothing without the recognition of satyam. What is the reality of it? So, like, if we use an example like the clay pot, it's nothing for me to say, no, there's really only clay there, but we experience the pot. We all know what we mean. There's really only clay there. Okay, still we have a pot experience. If I look at the ocean, I can say there's really only water there, but we have an experience of an infinite display of waves in a huge ocean. But really, there's only water. So since there's only water, I would say the waves are mithya. I experience the waves. There's no denying in the creation that you have an experience of mitya. That's what, because that's why we can even talk about mitya. That's why we have a name. So we experience the creation, but the experience of the creation doesn't cover in any way the reality of what is exact, what actually is there. And so then it becomes very interesting when you think in terms of nirvikalpa and sattvikalpa. You see what I'm saying? So just to take this a step further, when you, no matter what the condition of your mind or of your experiences of the world, those experiences don't cover you any more than the clay, the pot covers the clay, or the waves cover the ocean, if that viveka has taken place. And if the viveka has taken place thoroughly, viveka means I'm able to differentiate the satyam from the mithya, and see the difference. And all of the prakriyas, the teaching methodologies that are there in the Advaita Vedanta are just for that, to recognize the satyam, what is satyam, and to see its and see the mithya relationship of the creation or any and every vritti that you have, whatever thought modification, whatever emotion you have, whatever perception you have, whatever meditative experience you have, anything that is objectifiable or subject to change or exists within time, to be able to recognize the its adhishtana, that myself is its adhishtana. And that's not intellectual. I mean, we're using words to point to the reality of your self-experience. It's not just a hypothetical, like theoretical. You know, you're satyam and the world is mithya. Okay, you know. But this isn't that. This is the me. Your very self is actually not at all contained in anything. The conscious me. We can think we're a little, it's a little pea in a pod, you know, abiding here in this body, but it's actually not abiding anywhere. The whole universe is abiding in me. If anything, if I want to talk like that, the universe is abiding in me. And there's no place where you can put yourself as though to think that you're contained in this body. You're not contained in this body. That's why sometimes we've done meditations that sometimes work, sometimes don't work. But you just when, like if I say focus on yourself, just let the mind gently focus on yourself, and put yourself in the middle of the room. In other words, take yourself out of this conditioning of your being contained in this body, because experientially that's not even true. Simply not contained. Your body is the body, the sense organs are the sense organ, the thoughts are the thoughts. All of them have a consciousness for it, the adhishtana, for their being. You know. But say now in this room, if I'm looking at the wall, and then the intervening space, and all of you that are in between the wall and me, and all of the everything that I'm perceiving, where is my consciousness in reference to this three-dimensional perception? Where is it? Is it in this three-dimensional perception? Where are you going to place yourself, the me? In terms of your experience, we're so used to just automatically, almost thoughtlessly, just assume that I'm a pea in the pod, that I am this conscious body and everything else is separate. Subject, object, here's the subject, here's me, and these are all of my perceptions. But I'm talking, if you kind of let go of that and just look experientially at the experience that you're actually having, your being is not contained in anything. It's kind of a nice experience just to put the me in the center of the room. Hypothetically, and just let this experience exist in me, let the whole experience exist in me, and me be pervade the whole experience. Like let the pot exist in the clay, and let the clay pervade the pot, both ways. Even though to pervade the pot means there's some kind of pot there for it to pervade, but nevertheless we kind of say it like that. Let the pot, you know, exist in the clay, and the clay pervades the pot, which is true and obvious in reference to the pot. But what about if you say that in reference to every vritti that you have? If we think of our experience, in fact, if we think of our experiences as nothing but vrittis, because actually your only access to this physical world is through the vritti, is through the thought modification. Right? You need your sense organs to form, of this sense organs that can then form the thought modification of this room, and then that thought modification is illumined by consciousness, if we want to say that. Is pervaded by consciousness. We can say that, right? Yes? We have to be able to say that. We have to be able to say that. But if you can say that, then you should be able to, not worrying about the physicality of the room, just thinking about the vritti itself. Does the consciousness pervade the vritti? You have to say, yes, it pervades the vritti. There's no place in that vritti that consciousness is not. Right? So the vritti is three-dimensional. And so in this three-dimensional vritti, because the vritti is what you're seeing right now through your eyes, it's three-dimensional. In this three-dimensional vritti, is pervaded by consciousness. There's no part of the vritti in which you are not. Your being is not. So that means that now if I accept that, just in terms of vritti, then I should be able to recognize my being as pervasive to the vritti in the viveka. Mm-hmm. I pervade the vritti. The vritti has really, there's no place I am not. And the vritti includes much more than this physical body. So as I recognize myself in this physical body, I am the conscious being, I should be able to recognize that no part of this three-dimensional experience is separate from the self-experience of me. See, that's important, but to make you have nishta in that, to give you an experience of nishta in reference to that, is if I ask you to, instead of use your sense organs for this vritti, kind of close your eyes, for instance, or just imagine your living room at home, or imagine walking along in a park or at the ocean. Just have an imagination, any imagination, and then recognize. You can put yourself in the imagination also, but when you're doing it as an imagination, you have a vritti, an imaginal vritti, a memory vritti, right? There's no dehatma buddhi. There's not this identification of the self with the body in reference to your imagination, even if you're walking along in it. There's no such problem. And so when you have that vritti, then that you're the self with the vritti is your experience. It's your experience. But you have this vritti, which is same vritti as vritti. It's not the same. The dehatma buddhi, that conviction, the buddhi, the conviction that the atma is the deha, the body, the sukshma sharira, the karyakarana sangata, this body, mind, sense organs, is so strong, you know, that it captures the ahankara. So what's fun to do, as kind of a sadhana or to gain that clarity, is go from an imaginal vritti to the perceptual vritti, back and forth, and then try to carry the experience of the imaginal vritti to the experience of the perceptual vritti. Because vritti is vritti. It doesn't matter. Vritti is vritti. You equally pervade the imaginal vritti as you do the perceptual vritti. And so that will help. That will help you to release yourself from being a pea in the pod. Yeah, really, it helps because you're not contained. Actually, you're changeless. You're not contained, no matter what the body is doing. When I first recognized that, it was the funniest thing because I was walking down. I don't know why I recognized it that time, but I was walking down that pathway toward class in India. And for some reason, as I was walking, there was this, as though separation, or I just, my buddhi recognized it, that I'm not walking. I'm not doing anything. All of this is taking place in me. I'm not away from it. I'm not away from it. But I'm not changing in any way. Not at all. Now you can recognize that when you have an imaginal vritti, it's easier, but you have to recognize it here, you know. I remember going, I've done this for you before, I'm sure, but I remember going, noticing that, and just, I stopped. And then I was afraid to lose it, because I saw it. So I was going, like that. That was ridiculous. I don't know who's watching me. And then I was going to see if when I turned my head, I turned. You know? And then I recognized, no, you're always the same. You're always the same. You know? And the thing is, when that recognition is there, you know, then as you gain that type of clarity or whatever, that viveka, then where is the savikalpa? The savikalpa itself is mitya. And so in the aparoksha nibhuti, anubhuti means experience. Aparoksha means that non-objectifiable experience, which is the nature of the self. Your self is always nirvikalpa. And so the question is, when all of this is being experienced, where's the nirvikalpa? Because this is obviously duality. But once the nirvikalpa self is recognized, and the nature of this creation is recognized as having no intrinsic being, then the relationship between this creation and me as its intrinsic being becomes one of satya-mitya. And then it's not really, you experience duality, but it's mitya. And mitya-duality is not duality. So mitya-duality is duality, then it's a dual creation. The mitya-duality is duality, there's duality then. You can't have a dvaita or non-duality. If mitya is real, if mitya is mitya, as it's what the word means, if it's mitya, then it doesn't disturb the non-dual, your non-dual self. Yeah. So that's, we have to get at this kind of recognition in different ways. You know, that's kind of a living, ongoing recognition. And one thing I was trying to point out in the contemplation is that even though it's nice to sit and relax your body and let the mind run and all of that, and just come to a deep relaxation, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's also nice to know that immediately, at any time, no matter what is going on, you can do this. It doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't really matter what your mind is doing or what the emotions are. The emotions are mitya. You can immediately, you know, just the buddhi, it's not a physical reality where the buddhi is kind of stuck here. It's not stuck. It's not stuck anywhere. It can immediately, in spite of whatever the emotional tenor is or the emotional states or anything that can be there, that doesn't stop the buddhi from instantaneously recognizing your own being. It doesn't necessarily get away and remove you from the condition. You know, it doesn't necessarily remove you from the condition. It just gives you back yourself. And then the buddhi will deal with the condition from the standpoint of yourself. So I think it's I'm just saying these type of things because we think that in order to know myself, I have to do all of this and then have a meditative experience. The self is the meditative experience and it's always there. So that's what Shankara is saying in these last verses. Where is the nirvikalpa samadhi? That is the Atma Swarupa. Everything else is mitya. Does the Atma Swarupa, does your own nature, once known, once the ajnanam has been, the self-ignorance has been removed, once that self-ignorance has been removed, then what is needed for that self-recognition? Once the ignorance, because the self, the nature of yourself, the self-shining nature of yourself, has never not been there. Once the ajnanam has been, the ignorance, self-ignorance has been removed, then that adhyasa, that superimposition, is gone. And so now what do you need to do? Nothing. You don't need to do anything. We want to work on our mind because the mind is causing problems because of habitual patterns brought about by beginningless ignorance. But that doesn't mean that yourself is covered or not present. And so even though there's self-forgetfulness that takes place, initially, you can, on a dime, as they say, come home, no matter what the condition is. You or the condition is not covering you. The affect is not covering you. Even in painful affects, they're not covering you. You're still very much there. That doesn't mean you don't want to get rid of the painful affect, but it's not covering you. It's not all of a sudden putting a dark cloud over your being. It's not putting any cloud over it. It's like no cloud is covering the sun. It covers the sun for people who are other than the sun, right? It covers that for all the people that are not the sun, that are underneath the cloud are covered, the sun is covered, but what about for the sun? It's illuminating the cloud, so it's not affected in any way. So these things are kind of, you just have to keep bringing them to mind. That's why nididhyasana is so important. Because these are the nididhyasanas, these type of understandings, these are the type of recognitions. Always trying to bring this knowledge away from your overactive mind, you know, that's buzzing out here, staying in this theoretical no man's land, and always bringing it back to the reality of your own experience. That's why Vedanta is not a philosophy, it's a pramana, to give direct, immediate knowledge of something that is here. If you get lost out there in your mind, you have to bring it back and ground it in the reality of the experience that is actually here. The experience of mitya is here. The experience of yourself is here. And so all of your thinking and philosophizing has to be rooted in the experience that you're actually having. Otherwise, you're off in no man's land, lost. It's no longer rooted to your self-experience. So, anyway, it's a little pramanika talk. Let's go to verse 7. It's second chapter, first poli, verse 7. This is kind of started with this last verse, it's a little serious. Yeah. Ya pranena sampavati. Ya pranena sampavati. Aditya devatatmi. Aditya devatatmi. So good. Ya pranena sampavati.
Ya pranena sampavati.
Aditya devatatmi.
Aditya devatatmi.
Guham pravishya tishtanti.
Guham pravishya tishtanti.
Ya bhute pir vijayata.
Ya bhute pir vijayata.
Etatvaitata.
Etatvaitata.
Ya pranena sampavati. Aditira devatamayi. Guham pravishya tishtanti. Ya bhute bihi vijayata. Here ya is again for Brahman, for consciousness. And what's interesting, Swamiji would bring this up. If I say the word chitti means chitti, it means chitti means consciousness, it's feminine.
Mm-hmm.
If I say chaitanya, it's masculine, mm-hmm. consciousness, masculine. If I say chaitana, it's consciousness. Neuter. So there are many different words for consciousness, for existence, for nityam, for all of these, all different genders depending upon the word. So here we'd say ya chittihi, which consciousness, Brahman, as we'll see in the commentary, that which pranena sambhavati adityhi devatamayi. So here, adititi, the word aditi is feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Aditi, chittihi, means called the conscious being. It comes from the root adana. Adana man means the one who eats everything.
Mm-hmm.
Here, by eating everything, the one who experiences everything, the one who is the, I would say like this if we want to be really non-dual about it, the one because of whom everything is experienced. Without consciousness, without consciousness, there is no experience. And so even in any vritti, what lends knowledge or knownness to the vritti is only consciousness. Right? If I say this is known, this is known, this is known, in fact, knownness in reference to the entire creation is the common denominator, just the sat-chit is the conscious being is the common denominator to every experience that we have. We just take a look at every vritti as the common denominator, whether it be a vritti of something external or internal experience or memory, it doesn't make any difference. What is the same in every vritti is the sat-chit. Consciousness, existence. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. That's the sat-chit. That's the nature of conscious being. That is Brahman. And so without that is-knownness, right, nothing is known. Without the is-ness, nothing is. Without the knownness, nothing is known. So conscious being is the very adhishtana of every experience. Take away the sat-chit, there's no experience there. So here, this aditi comes from adana. That's why he said it just like this. He just says, adanat, because of eating everything. Because everything comes into it, is the idea. Every experience comes into it, is swallowed by it, it is called aditi. So anyway, that aditi, which is Brahman, so he says here, parasmat brahmanaha sambhavati. Parasmat Brahmaha means that non-dual Brahman, but limitless Brahman. From that limitless Brahman, Sambhavati is born. So that limitless Brahman, we said, from that limitless Brahman, this Aditi is born. Pranena. Prana, as seen earlier, is here in Nigarbha. It is born in the form of prana. in the form of Hiranyagarbha. So this Aditi, this Brahman, which is born Sambhavati as Hiranyagarbha, Devatamayi, in the form consisting of, we say here, in the form of prana, which is of Hiranyagarbha, which is consisting of all the devatas. Mm. So how Swamiji explains that, it consisting in the form of all the devatas, that every law is a devata. Every law. So say if we were to, in fact, if you listen sometimes to these discussions that we have online on the first page, he talks about this very thing in one of those discussions. This universe is can be viewed as dharma or as infinite order. It's an infinite manifestation of order. That's why we have science and math and these type of things. Where all of the subject matters that we study are a recognition of knowledge. They're a recognition of an infinite order. And so Swamiji will say we can view every one of these orders as a devata, because every part of the creation takes place in consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so like every part of this body, for instance, right, is part of me. Right? But they're different devatas. They have different jobs. Mm-hmm. Right? So every organ has a different job. Every cell has a different job. So there's almost a countless or infinite order. But all of it is me. And so that means that every order we would call a devata. It's part of me. It's doing a job for me. Right? Mm-hmm. And so the devatas are all of the conscious aspect. Every aspect in the creation has consciousness. And they all belong to me. They're all part of one body, which that we call Ishwara. So here, if we say that Aditi, the one because of whom everything is experienced, right, which is Brahman, that Aditi is born as Hiranyagarbha, consisting of all of the devatas, right? So the whole creation is working together as part and parcel of one being that we call Hiranyagarbha, which is Mithya. Hiranyagarbha is the first expression of consciousness, so pervaded by sattva and rajas. That means the conscious being that holds whole creation together before panchikarana, then we call it virat. Before going through that five-fold process to make a physical creation, we call virat. Hiranyagarbha is the first manifestation of maya, of Ishwara coming into manifestation. So just Brahman, just a little aside, Brahman, consciousness, plus the maya upadhi in causal condition, mm-hmm. means it has not yet manifest. That's Ishwara. Right? When Ishwara manifests, we have different names. Ishwara, from the standpoint of the subtle body, total subtle body, is what we call Hiranyagarbha. From the standpoint of the entire creation, physical and subtle, we call Virat. So we have these names. The jiva, which is part and parcel of Ishwara, as part of Hiranyagarbha, we call Taijasaha. Mm-hmm. You know, from the standpoint of Virat, we call the jiva Vishwa, which is names. Whole Mandukya Upanishad is this. So where is Ishwara and all this? Ishwara is the Maya Upadhi with Brahman. The Maya Upadhi belongs to Brahman. It doesn't belong to anybody else. So that Maya, you know, is intrinsic in incidental attribute to Brahman. Incidental attribute means it's mithya. Maya, the order of reality which Maya enjoys, is mithya. Mithya means it has no independent being. Brahman is non-dual. If Brahman is non-dual, there's nothing else. If you say, once you say something is non-dual, then there's not non-dual plus something. So we say, Brahman is non-dual, and then we have space, air, fire, water, earth that make up the creation. So we have the non-dual Brahman, and then we have the creation. Then we don't have non-dual Brahman. We have Brahman and the creation. That's dual. If you say non-dual, that means one without a second. We don't even say non-dual. We say one without a second. There's only one thing here. If there's only one thing, then what is Maya? That would make two things. We have Brahman and Maya. Unless Maya is Mithya. Mithya means, Mithya is an order of reality. It means it has no being. We experience it, but it has no separate, independent existence. We experience Maya, Mithya, as Mithya all the time. Every thought you have, every imagination you have, is Maya, and its order of reality is Mithya. It brings about no change to you, right? Like, that's why we do little exercises like imagine a beautiful a meadow or an ocean scene or imagine the city. That imagination comes immediately. And it can be a very strong, colorful, intense imagination also. And you can immediately withdraw it. You can project it, you can sustain it, and withdraw it. So you're your little Ishwara. Bhagavan gave us this, really. What Ishwara is infinite, we are in a limited way. So if we say Ishwara is the whole manifest Maya Upadhi, we are part of that. It's called Sameshti is the whole, Vyeshti is the small, part of the whole. Sameshti, the whole, everything, like a forest, and the tree is Vyeshti, it's a part. But we're made of the same material as Ishwara, from causal to subtle to gross. It's not a different material, it's the same Maya. Same material, same five elements, same sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so you have the capacity, you know, to experience yourself as a limited Ishwara in reference to Jiva Srishti. Jiva Srishti is subjective, it's not shared, it's your little experience. But because you the self that you are is the self, the Atma that Ishwara is, right? The relationship that you have to your imagination, you know, or to your dream, is the same relationship that Bhagavan, that same awareness has to the whole. There's no difference at all in terms of the relationship of non-dual changeless consciousness to Maya, whether it be little Maya or big Maya. Both are equally Mithya. And so that's very helpful in really being able to recognize, to differentiate yourself from your experiences. It makes all the difference in the world. So hear what he says. So there's a little Mahavakya here. He says that aditi, that which is consciousness, which is born in the form of Hiranyagarbha, means as the manifestation of this Maya, of this universe, and which consists of all the devatas, it's that very aditi who, having entered Guham Pravishya, having entered the cave, right, of the buddhi, into the depths of the buddhi, it becomes a cave-like because it's dark in there. It's not shining out so that everybody can see. Guham pravishya tishtantim, having entered, it remains there, ya bhute bihi vijayata, having been born along with all the elements. Right, because It now, you know, having been born along with all of the elements, as the creation, as Hiranyagarbha, comes, it comes with a sattva, rajas, tamas, and space, air, fire, water, earth, which has a sattva component, a rajas component, a tamas component. And so the sattva component is which is causing all the problem, actually, because that means that the whole creation gets to identify itself with consciousness. Mm. Right? And so when it's identifying itself with consciousness, it's just not consciousness by itself. It's consciousness amidst all of the five elements, which include this physical body and the prana and the organs of action and the five sense organs and the mind that's thinking and experiencing itself as a conscious being. Then that's the condition that that causes the, that limited condition causes the ajnanam, because upadhi, the upadhis that are make beingness, body, mind, sense organs, reflect consciousness because of the sattva, and then that sattva mind says, I am the conscious being.
Mm-hmm.
Now it says, I am the conscious being, that's the mithya mind talking, but it's the mithya mind, mithya upadhis that are suffering, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so moksha belongs to the mithya mind and the mithya upadhis. There's no problem for Brahman, for your being, there's no problem at all. But this body, mind, sense organs are suffering, and so want to be liberated from that suffering. And, but the only way to liberate the body, mind, sense organs from the suffering is to know who I actually am. Because the body, mind, sense organs, without that knowledge, can't but suffer. Can't but suffer, you know. This body, by its very nature, is going to suffer because of projection of ananda onto the world. I'm going to suffer. The mind is going to suffer. We'll get into that later, but it's a given that you'll suffer without recognizing the one who's free from suffering. Otherwise, the freedom from suffering is bound by time. That's why the Buddha says, you know, any sukha-vritti is a sukha-vritti, right, is just a dukkha-yoni, just a wound for dukkha, because of time. So, yeah, I feel great now, but I know I'm going to be miserable later. So there's this underlying suffering. So the one who, as an anuvritti from the previous verses, what's understood here, the one who sees, that mumukshu who sees the nature of the self, who, having entered this guha, having entered the buddhi, remains abiding there, being born as Hiranyagarbha among all of these elements, right, existing now among all of these elements. The one who sees the self, the aditi, the one because of whom all of the experiences are known, the one who recognizes that one knows this, who this Brahman is that Nachiketas was asking about. That's the Etavaita, right? That is this alone. The one who understands this, that one sees. Okay. That's enough. Done. Now these verses are done, we're going to go into a different Swasti Pajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Ko Brahmanebhya Shivamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varushati Parjanya Prithivi Sashishalini Desho Yamksho Barahitaha Brahmanas santu nirbhayaha. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayaha. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu. Ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Monica. Hi, Marjorie.
Could you go over that image again real quickly? Who enters the cave of the Bodhi? Is that
Brahman? It's like saying if you you have to understand.
Yeah.
Like, say if I build this house, this room, the space is entered. The space has never not been there, really. But from the standpoint of the room, once the room is built, the space is there. So you can use this kind of as an image, but you have to understand that there's no space going, now I'll enter the room. It's just that when the upadhi is there, you find the self is there.
Right. And the darkness?
Well, the darkness is the ajnana. There's deep into the cave of the buddhi. Because there's, until there's knowledge. You can use it like that, or you can just say it entered into the interior, the cave of the buddhi. Swamiji sometimes kind of highlighted. You imagine going into a cave and sitting there. You can see out, everything's fine, but nobody, if anybody's looking in, they can't see you because it's too much ajnana. There's no viveka.
So is that connected with the sattvic guna?
It's connected with ajnana.
Huh?
Well, the buddhi is connected with sattva. The buddhi, the citta, the memory, you know, the manas, fluctuating mind, all the ahankara, all of these are sattva. The five sense organs are sattva. That means by their nature they reflect consciousness. Yeah, so your buddhi is sattva, it reflects consciousness. The physical body is just the physical body without being without the sukshma sharira, without the subtle body, which pervades through the sense of touch, pervades the whole body, makes the whole body into a sense organ, really. You know, it wouldn't have any sense of consciousness like a dead body. It's just, you know, something to cast off, dress. It doesn't have consciousness per se from its own standpoint. With the sukshma sharira, it's enjoying consciousness as long as the subtle body is there.
I find hard to like, if you have a spiritual experience, or sometimes I think even if you like take a psychedelic drug or something like that, you can have an experience of seeing consciousness in living things, like in plants. You can feel it, you know,
it's
plants and animals and people. But consciousness pervades objects as well, objects that are not, don't reflect it. But you don't get a sense of that, even in that very, even if your mind is subtle enough, like in those experiences, to sense it in other things.
You might be, yeah. The consciousness is there as the adhishtana for everything, whether it be the rug or the chair or whatever, or a rock. Does it make any difference? But the upadhi itself, there's no sattva. So from the standpoint of the upadhi, it's not reflecting it. It's like if I hold a rock and a mirror up to the sun, they're both inert, but one has a capacity to reflect and the other doesn't. Both are being warmed by the sun, both are illumined by the sun, you know. But one reflects the sun, the other doesn't. But even though it's reflecting the sun, it's not really, you know, enjoying the sun. And so even though it reflects it, but your mind, the sattva, reflects consciousness, but that's not that it's enjoying consciousness. The consciousness is the experience of consciousness is the consciousness. It's not the reflection of consciousness. The consciousness is not being given to the reflection, but there's a superimposition between the consciousness and that which reflects it. You know?
So it sounds like to have a spiritual experience is to recognize consciousness as that spirituality and not any of the upadhis.
Well, there's a lot of different kinds of spiritual experiences, and they have to do with degrees of subtlety in the mind. You know, so say if you take drugs, for instance, or different types of entheogens, they bring about different states of relaxation and whatnot, different types of reactions in the mind that can create a lot of experiences. It's not negating the experiences at all. It's just that's what they are. They are experiences, and when you're off those drugs, those experiences will go. There's also meditative experiences when the mind, through meditation, pranayama, different things, we bring the mind into a very subtle condition, you know. And so you will enjoy the mind's ability to give you a different level of experiences. And drugs can give you a different level of experiences that you would not normally have. Unless through your own antahkarana shuddhi, the mind becomes more and more relaxed and more uncluttered by your likes and dislikes and your complexes and all of that. And the mind itself will get different experiences. The self is always exactly the same experience. It's not giving you different experiences. It's always the same. But the upadis, by working with the upadis, even a change in diet, you know, or how much you exercise the body, or how much pranayama you do, it changes the experience. Yoga is incredible for changing the experience that you have. For the whole sukshma sharira, let alone the physical body, it really changes the quality of your experience. But those experiences that can be changed belong to the upadis and belong to maya. And there's certain experiences are more desirable than others, and there's nothing wrong with having those experiences or creating a body, mind, sense organs that has a more subtle or a nicer level of experience than not doing anything or being a couch potato. You know, one is better if you have the discipline and whatever it takes to do that.
So what you're sensing when you have a mind cell enough to experience it is really more like sort of seeing the sattva in things rather than like consciousness itself, because in that case you would...
Well, the thing is that the consciousness is the underlying adhishtana of every experience. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't change. So you're experiencing a mind that is very, very subtle. You could say that, like in meditative experiences, a mind that's very subtle, that's very clear, is going to, you know, have a lot of tejas in it because of the level of the shanti. It'll be shiny, it'll have a lot of brilliance. You can feel a great deal of expansion in the mind, or the mind pervading the environment and all of that type of thing, because of the subtle condition of the mind. Those are all wonderful experiences and give you a sense of Ishwara and, you know, all of these beautiful things. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good, actually. I'd rather spend my time, you know, generating those kind of experiences than others. But the thing is to recognize is that there's someone there that's the adhishtana of all of them and is the changeless in all of them, and itself is what is beloved. The experiences without the self are not the beloved. They're just experiences. But what is most dear is yourself, and the recognition that self is free and changeless, and nobody can hurt it, including you, and Ishwara can't hurt it, and you can't hurt it, nobody can do anything to it. Yeah. Is really that moksha. It's not enough, though. The moksha is I am Ishwara. That all of this body, mind, sense organs belongs to this as an infinite conscious being. We see it in the dream, once we're awake from the dream, but we have to be awake. We have to wake up from the dream to recognize that. And here we have to wake up from the dream, but the dream remains. So we don't,
we don't have kind of that Archimedean point, you know, where you can view it from a distance and say, oh, that's, you know, that was just a dream. Recognizing the mithya of the dream. You have to recognize the mithya of this reality while you're in it. You know, and recognize Ishvara. Recognize that this is a limited intelligence, the creation is your infinite intelligence. And so then to start enjoying having shraddha in the infinite intelligence and being patient and slowing down into Ishvara's time. Your upadhi, the body, mind, sense organs, not the Ishvara Srishti, is in Ishvara, is moving according to the Ishvara Srishti, not the Jiva Srishti. The Jiva Srishti is just going so fast, and Bhagavan is so slow compared to it, you know, that people get impatient. You want things to be, the flower to unfold faster than it is. It's like watching a clock. Or, you know, waiting for the water to boil. Mm-hmm. Nothing happens. Come on now. Let's get this ball rolling here.
Well, did you have that sense of impatience?
Probably. I don't know who didn't. I think you slow down, with knowledge, you slow down more and more to Ishvara's time, and you enjoy that. You enjoy Ishvara's time, because here we are. We have all of this, it's right here. But to the degree that, you know, you haven't settled in your knowledge, your mind is always wanting to become something else or for something else to happen. So you're like waiting for something else, missing what you have. And that's stressful, whereas what you have is not stressful because you have it. Because here it is, you know, this is it. And it changes nice and slowly. You know. So you can give up a lot of stress. You give up tremendous amount of stress the more you can be present in an Ishvara's time. And just enjoy your prarabdha, the life, with all of its good things and all of its challenging things. And the thing is that when you're actually dealing with it, it's not anywhere near as the problem mm-hmm. as when you're worried about dealing, having to deal with it, imagining. So I think that just takes time. We grow into it. We naturally grow into it. More you just understand and assimilate your experience. In the light of your knowledge, you grow into slowing down and being with your life.
Haranya Garba always is confusing to me. I'm trying to clarify it.
Okay.
It's like the subtle aspect of Ishvara.
Okay.
Has some connection to like, because that's connection to prana, like in the verse, mm-hmm. and also would that mean that like our subtle bodies are part of Hiranyagarbha the way that our physical bodies are part of Ishvara?
Are part of Virat.
Virat.
Okay, so you were here for the Mandukya.
Yeah, I was confused about that then.
Yeah, okay. Mandukya is actually goes through all of this in terms of dividing up our experience in this way, that when the creation initially comes into manifestation, even though in a sense there's no time involved, you break it up as though there's time involved. That the subtle elements come before the physical elements. So the subtle elements, I mean the subtle elements come before the physical elements. But all the elements are born of sattva, rajas, and tamas. So we'd say that maya itself is sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so sattva, rajas, and tamas first manifest as the five subtle elements. before they've gone through a process of panchikarana to become fivefold. So then what we say is, of the five subtle elements, the sattva and rajas aspect of those subtle elements are the sattva and rajas. They don't go through panchikarana. They don't go through this process of becoming grossified. It's only the tamas aspect that goes through panchikarana, that's becoming fivefold, becoming the physical world, as opposed to the subtle world. So sattva and rajas never go through any kind of grossification. The physical world does. And then the sattva and rajas pervade the physical world as a subtle body. A subtle body in reference to Ishwara is called Hiranyagarbha. The subtle body in reference to the jiva is called Tejasa. And then the elements, the tamas aspect of the five subtle elements that go through this process of becoming fivefold, become the physical world that we call Virat. Now, from the standpoint of just Ishwara, there's not really a subtle and physical. It's all just a manifestation of Maya. But within that manifestation, we can make this distinction between subtle and physical. Because of the sattva and the rajas aspects and the tamas aspects that give this, within the Maya, this subtle and physical reality. It's the same will work for you, like if you have a dream or if you have an imagination, you're going to, maybe so you have perception and thought and the imagination, and you have a few things that you're perceiving in the imagination. So that we divide up into the subtle and the physical, like that. It's still all only Maya. So we say Ishwara is Brahman with this Maya. And the Maya, so Ishwara is this Maya capacity that it, Brahman with this Maya capacity that it has, called incidental attribute, because it doesn't, called Nitya, because it doesn't bring about any change to Brahman. And so this Maya, from beginningless time, is said to be from the Shastra. It's like, I mean, this isn't coming out of somebody's mind, it's the Shastra itself. It says that it's cyclical, beginningless and cyclical, coming into manifestation, being sustained, resolving, manifested, and resolving. From beginningless time, Maya is like that. And there's no beginning for Maya, because Maya, there's nobody to create Maya. So Maya is considered beginningless as Brahman is timeless. So that's the how the Shastra talks about this creation. But really, it's not that it's true or false, we accept it as being true, but the point of it all is to recognize the Satyam Nitya in reference to yourself being the non-dual Adhishtana of this creation. That's the point of, because there's so many different paradigms you can make for this universe. The paradigm that we use in the Shastra is to help you recognize what is Satyam and what is Mithya. And what is Mithya, what is Maya, Mithya is the order of reality for Maya, includes this body, mind, sense organs, everything that you've taken to be yourself. That's the point. Even when we do this panchikarana and how the creation projects and everything, you have to be able to see that, oh, this is part of that projection. This body, mind, sense organs actually belongs to the creation. And the sense organs have all the sense organs have a relationship with the sense objects to cause this see or seeing, like the eyes see color, the ears hear sound, so sound is there, you know? And so this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of the creation. Right, which is all of it objectifiable. It's not just like this world is objectifiable. Everything about the upadis are objectifiable also. So when you go through this understanding of the creation, in the unfoldment of the creation, everything about yourself is given over, is recognized as part of the creation. And the atma, your being, everything, all of the upadis are recognized, oh, they actually are part of Ishwara, and your being is the one non-dual being of the whole creation. So this me is the one non-dual me, which is the self of the whole creation. So this model of the creation is meant to help you see that.
But
to help you to differentiate the Hevivaka.
Like Shankara specifically says, Hiranyagarbha, he's trying to like point to the subtle quality of Ishvara. Like there is a reason to use that term instead of just Ishvara, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah. Because then you're accounting for subtle experience. The soul, that the sattva that pervades the creation is Hiranyagarbha. The energy that pervades the creation is Hiranyagarbha. Sometimes I was thinking, there's one word I'm thinking of. I'll think about it in a minute. I can't remember it. One word for Hiranyagarbha. Somewhere in there, trying to work its way out to the front. There's many words, different words that we use.
So, being in Nirvikalpa is the recognition of the changelessness of...
What were you saying?
Oh, the Nirvikalpa of myself is always present. You say that...
Always.
You can just... How do you notice that, then? It as changelessness or as knownness or as a sense of me, or what do you do to recognize that?
Well... It's the one who's ever always present that never changes.
Mm.
In your experience, you kind of take it for granted that you're always the one that's there, no matter what the experience, but you never differentiate the one who's always there from the things that are always changing. So that differentiation has to take place, because actually, you talk and act like I am always here. As long as I'm alive, as long as I have this body, I am here, whatever. As long as I'm thinking, I have these thoughts, I have these feelings, I'm always here. But the thoughts and feelings and the thinking and all that, they're not always here. They're coming and going.
Right.
So it's the viveka to differentiate the me that's ever present and changeless from the things that are continually coming and going, which is not normally done.
Yeah.
You don't usually even think about it. It's just, I am this person who's having all these experiences. You don't recognize that the me experience is steady and changeless and never shifts in any way. It doesn't get better with the meditative experience. The meditative experience can be great, but yourself is exactly the same. In fact, it's really a good time to, when you're contemplating or having a deep shanti or a very absorbed experience, to focus, instead of on the experience, just on your being. To recognize that, oh, it's just it's me. The same one who's with the same me that's self-evident in the mundane experience,
mm-hmm.
or in the negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's moksha, really, the recognizing that the self is always there, is always free. And then the secondary gain is the mind settling down and gaining much more shanti naturally, because it's not any longer dependent upon the world being in this way or that way, or this desire being fulfilled or not fulfilled, or my being successful or out. The self doesn't care if you're successful or not. Whatever anybody judges as successful or not, the Atma isn't saying anything about that. It's just illumining the mind's opinions about everything, you know.
So it doesn't help or damage?
No. It's full and complete. You're full and complete in and of yourself. As the mind goes on discovering that, it starts enjoying the fullness of your being, moment to moment to moment, and then giving all of this, let this be Ishvara. It is Ishvara. So let it be Ishvara. If it is Ishvara, and you're trying, you don't let it be Ishvara. Yeah? So you're creating all these problems for yourself. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
Even, you know, when you get yourself into some trouble, some negative, trouble means negative vrittis or hurts or confusions or whatever, that's also Ishvara. You're bumping up against something. You know, your mind, the way you handle the situation, is bumping up against some dharma. That's how I look at it. Bumped up against some dharma. You know. And so that's just a it's like a putting your hand a little too close to the fire. You have to pull it back and you have to see what's going on there.
And where's the nirvikalpa when those negative parts of
the nirvikalpa is only recognizing yourself in the mityatva of the creation. The creation is not going to stop. As long as you have this upadhi, it's going to keep going and creating all kinds of events and situations. But it's not covering you, and it's not away from you. It's totally dependent upon you for its being. You have that viveka has to be there. And your mind, as it withdraws from the raga dvesha, this, I need this to be happy, I need this to be happy, it's all projection. As it settles into your knowledge, then it's just more enjoying the creation and the prarabdha karma that makes your life this time around. And just being able to be with that and let it be Ishvara and enjoy Ishvara. Let Ishvara take care of the problems. Be patient. Be interested. Now's a good time for us to be practicing that. Be interested.
The next 4 years.
What is happening here? Actually, in big, broad strokes, you can start to really kind of appreciate why and how this, you know, can be taking place now. Seems like a natural progression. It's been going on for many years, step by step by step.
In reference to what?
Oh, just the condition of the world and the politics and all of that. Mm. But it's one thing to be interested in it and kind of trying to understand what's going on and doing your best in it. Another is to be totally engaged in a political furor. I'd rather be interested and do my part, whatever that is. Whatever your footprint is, the footprint that your prarabdha karma gives you, you know.
It's like that metaphor of the body, like we're each doing our own thing, like we're speaking sort of the same body language, so we're apart if we're doing our thing the way we're called to do it, probably makes the most health for the body.
Yeah, exactly. Tsongji uses examples like that. He's also used that. Sometimes makes up a story about like a machine, like say you have a sewing machine. I forget what machine he uses. I love a sewing machine. So there's a sewing machine, and one of the bolts thinks its job is too small. One of the little nuts that goes on a bolt. It doesn't want to just be the bolt. It wants to be the motor. You know? Not a bolt. The bolt is too small and too insignificant. But once that bolt falls off, the whole machine's in trouble. Yeah. So it's not about their job's too small. People aren't satisfied with their footprint. You know what I mean by footprint?
Yeah.
How much influence they're having over the world and all of that, you know? I only have a little tiny footprint. Yeah.
I always find that they don't really realize how much that rippling effect happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's important. Everybody's prarabdha is important. It keeps the whole thing going. You have a place, that's where you're born.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a place. We just have to be and keep in our live out the life that we have. We can't be somebody else, you know. You can improve your own dharma, your own way of being in the world. it's still your contained, you're contained in your prana as well. If you try not to be, that really doesn't work.